Well, yeah. It's called Frankenstein, Alive, Alive, or Frankenstein, Alive, Alive. And it's basically, it's a sequel to the novel, Frankenstein. It picks up from the very last page of the novel and follows the monster for a long time.
Yeah, we're going to do 13 issues, and it, just to try to help it match up to the book, is page illustration, we're going to do it in a really loose style, so there's lots of spreads. Try to do it working out like a four-panel grid, just keep it really moving.
Yeah.
You know, so lots of Frankenstein.
Absolutely.
And I'm on the same page, you know, not to make you feel horrible, but, you know, I had that book when I was a kid, and it was huge. I'm sorry. I apologize first. But I carry that book around with me in the Marvel. I carry that around with me until I grew up. As a matter of fact, it was, you know, since all the movie stuff and all this, you know, crap that's happened over the years, the only name she recognized of anybody I've ever worked with was Barnes, because I was so obsessed with it. Sorry, now I said a little. Keep going. We'll make it worse and worse. So, getting to now, after doing all the books we've done together, now actually be doing a sequel to Pranks is a dream come true.
This is going to be fun.
So, yeah, I don't know. You really could just dump us.
Yeah.
Does anybody have any questions or anything? Yeah.
I met Steve the very first time here in Dallas. Was that like 4 or 5 years ago? 5 years ago, at one of the Dallas Comic Cons, and I had no idea who he was. I thought, you know, he was just this really nice guy. He was a fan, you know. He didn't like talking. He was obviously very familiar with everything I ever did, and it wasn't until we went back home.
Well, that's
what's
funny. We found out in Dallas that we lived 2 blocks apart for about 5 years.
Yeah.
But we didn't know it.
Yeah.
You know, it's LA, and we walked anywhere, so.
Yeah.
You know, just had no clue. I mean, so we started really just hanging out at first.
Well, yeah, we went to a neighborhood bar.
Yeah.
And over beers, came up with Dead, She Said.
Yeah.
You know, like in a half hour.
Yeah.
Had you know, the entire book plotted, you know, the whole storyline and everything.
And my whole thing was, I was so happy to be hanging out with Bernie. I just figured everybody must talk about work. And I'm not gonna bring it up. I just want to hang out. And then you did that Treehouse of Horror.
Oh right.
And I remember that sort of got the comic book back.
Yeah.
I remember you sat me down and you were like, I think I want to do some comic books again.
Well, what happened was I got kind of shanghaied into animation job with a small animation studio, and it was it was like more or less steady work, which was nice and kind of mindless. There wasn't a lot of creativity involved. You know, I was redesigning biker mice from Mars. And, you know, for like almost 2 years, and eventually getting just insanely sick of it. Then I got approached by Bongo Comics to do, it was Len Wein called me and said, you know, hey, Bongo Comics wants to do something with you and me for the next Bart Simpson's Treehouse of Horror. And, you know, I said, wow, The Simpsons, you know, I'm a big fan. I don't know if I can draw that. And he said, well, how about we do a retelling of the Swamp Thing story in the Simpsons world? And, you know, I said, okay, you got me. You know, yeah, I can't resist that. And this was the first comic book stuff that I'd done in about 10 years. I'd kind of I kind of left comics behind. I moved from New York to Los Angeles to work in movies. You know, I'd done a little monster designing, you know, when I was on the East Coast, and thought, you know, maybe I lived in town, you know, I'd get a lot more movie work. And, you know, it comes and goes, you know, if you're designing monsters for movies, it's not a steady gig, you know.
I'd be really surprised if I was going to know some of what you've done work on. Because I was really surprised when I found out about Galaxy Quest.
Galaxy Quest, yeah.
The person designed all monsters for Galaxy Quest.
Yeah. Well, most especially the one that was in the movie that looked almost exactly like the drawings was the little blue babies.
Yeah.
They loved the little blue babies with the shark teeth, you know. And you know, I'm trying to think of movies that I worked on that actually got made.
They made Ghostbusters.
Because yeah, a lot of the work, a lot of movies get planned and talked about and actually go into pre-production, and then for one reason or another, they pull the plug, and the movie, you know, the project just kind of dies, and the movie never gets made, and it's the nature of the business. You know, I'm amazed at the amount of money they throw away on, you know, stuff that never happens.
It's unbelievable. I mean, that's the case on every script.
Yeah.
Just, I mean, every time you hear somebody say, you know, they wrote a script and threw it away, that's at least $100,000 a minute.
Oh, yeah.
Every time.
Yeah.
So, you know, they waste. And then, yeah, they make a movie.
Yeah.
You know, and I was really lucky because recently, what was that portfolio? Almost been in the dumpster. You were moving, and you found a portfolio, a box. It was a box that you guys almost put in the dumpster, and then you wound up at the last second saying, opened it up.
Yeah.
You let me play with it for a few days. It was just filled with just artwork from, I mean, there was Frankenstein sketches in there.
There was stuff that I had completely forgotten about. You know, not just my stuff. You know, I found stuff that, drawings that were given to me years ago by Mike Faluda. You know, and I thought this was literally in the trash pile, in the house. It was ready to go into the dumpster. You know, and you know, I just thought, you know, from the shape and the size of the box, I thought, well, there might be something in here. You know,
yeah, like literally Frankenstein sketches.
Yeah,
and I remember the writing the bullet, the big zombie paintings.
Oh right.
Yeah, that's a great case of something. Yeah. People never got to see those. Bernie just did them.
They're like 3 feet, yeah, like 3 foot tall, you know, kind of skull face, you know.
Yeah, for a film.
Zombie girls, yeah.
Never had
a film. And one of them was for Riding Bullet, and they just never used it. So they made it, you know. I did a lot of stuff in the movie that just never made it onto camera.
Yeah, that's kind of a sucky thing about L.A. You really can't, you can make a living never, ever having anything. I know writers.
No, it's true. It's true.
Just writes bad scripts, sell them, never get made.
I talked to Howard Chaykin, and he said, you know, I made my living doing that for like 20 years, just, you know, writing scripts and, you know, being paid really good money to write the scripts. And, you know, he said, I don't think one of them was ever actually made.
Yeah. I can't imagine.
I just can't imagine.
Well, you know, it's like he said, it's good money, you know. Yeah. That's like, you know, icing on the cake, you know.
Yeah.
If they actually make a movie of it. You know, but yeah, there's I don't know, for every movie that gets made, I don't know, there must be hundreds of scripts and treatments that you know, you never hear about, you never see.
Yeah, well, actually, even with 30 Days a Night, I wrote the first draft, and then they brought in this guy to do the second draft, and then it was Stu Beattie, and then we finally all came, but there's one draft they won't even let me read. And I was like, and then all they said was, why don't you let me read it? And the guy goes, vampire or polar bears? And I was like, I don't ever want to see that script. Like, never. Ever. Yeah. No, I couldn't.
I think it's cute.
It just sounds like he said that he went off the rails a little bit, you know. So I've never read that version. That's the thing. They just, you know, they hire people. They don't always know. I mean, I know a couple times that I've been hired to write stuff. I have no clue.
Yeah.
You know, they hired me a few months ago to write the R.L. Stein script.
And you know what? It goes across the board. It goes across the board. I remember Frank Darabont made The Green Mile. Okay. And, you know, the movie came out, and the first job offer he got was like, I don't know, a Fast and Furious movie or, you know, Grand Theft Auto or something, you know. And I remember him saying to me, I wonder what it was they saw in The Green Mile that made them think, I'm the guy to do this movie.
Yeah. I know. Well, you know, it was funny, too, because I wound up going and buying the R.L. Stein book with the story.
Right.
And it had one of your drawings in.
Oh, jeez, remember? Yeah, I know that one, yeah.
And he had done it. He was like, oh, yeah, I did a drawing.
Yeah. And, you know, I wasn't familiar with R.L. Stein either. You know, I haven't read a single story of his except the one I did the drawing for.
Yeah.
You know, and I thought, well, you know, I should read it.
I figured since I'm writing a script, I should read it. Because I clearly live with people that read mine. So, you know. And, you know, I'm going through that right now, actually. With, you know, we've got Criminal and Cop is at Universal, and they did that thing. They got rid of the first writer, and he did three drafts. They got rid of him. Now they hired another guy. And I keep doing it. I'm like, I keep kind of doing that. But yeah. Universal... Something about LA, they've decided that the comic writers can't write screenplays.
Right.
They've decided. So they want other people. So I'm like, so you've wasted God knows how much money.
Yeah.
You're gonna hire another guy.
Yeah.
I was like, just give me a shot. Yeah.
And when it comes to something that's based on a comic book, I don't know, they don't seem to have a really clear idea of, you know, what this story is all about. Like, you know, the first thing Guillermo del Toro told me that the producers talked to him about Hellboy real early on. And one of the first questions they asked was, can we get rid of the big red guy?
Yes. Remember, I had not quite physically restrained in the first meeting, but I met the producers at Sony. And the first thing one of the producers says, I don't think the vampire should talk. And I went, well, you should have bought a different comic. They're like, all right, let's settle down. He's like, well, what's your argument? And I was like, my argument is that if they don't talk, it's called a zombie movie. You know? But it's unbelievable when you come in there. And, you know, had one, you know, I won't name them, but, you know, so a producer, comic publisher came in and was like, I think all the vampires should be women and pretty much naked. I was like, you are not turning this into Vampire Bikini Party.
Yeah, really.
You bastard.
That's a whole different movie.
But that was the kind of, that's the kind of stuff you have to deal with.
Yeah.
You know, that they'll come at you. It's unbelievable. You know.
Yeah.
How about if it takes place in Hawaii? It's unbelievable.
Yeah. I wonder sometimes that, you know, movies at all, let alone good movies, ever get made.
Well, actually, I do have one 30 days where there was some justice. When we were first, we had to go out and pitch it, you know, when we were selling it. And we were in one office, and this kid I could just tell. He was, he was going to, we're talking, he was flanked by these two people who were really friendly, and this guy in the middle. He was just a development executive. And I told him, me and Ted Adams, the poster, I would tell him the whole pitch for 30 days. And I hadn't even written all of it yet. And he gets in and he goes, you know, vampires need motivation. And I went, what do you mean motivation? Motivation is to kill you. You know, he's like, that's all motivation. He goes, I don't know. How about if there's a diamond underneath Barrow, Alaska that will turn him into daywalkers? And I was just like, oh, you know, and we left, came back. And then somebody called me the next day and he got fired. He got fired and the other two got promoted just for that, because they didn't buy, you know, obviously we just walked out of there, and then the next day it turned into this freaking, you know, mayhem with the studios and that kid, you know.
So you're saying you don't need to get upset or like these kids?
Not well.
You just waited out.
That's one story out of thousands. No, that's not the only time I've ever heard. Most of the time you hear about the guy who says stuff like that, he gets promoted, or now he's running the studio.
All too often.
And then I'm really, then I remember not yelling at him in the meetings. And now they're running the studio. That happens. But, so, do you have any questions or anything?
Because basically it spoils the fun, you know, and you will thank me in 6 months or so when this is printed and is actually coming out, and you open it up to that first page and say to yourself, what the hell is this, you know?
I mean, yes, Wolverine's not going to die or anything like that. There's no giveaway or things like that.
But no, not a word. You know, about it. You know, we've got, you know, an idea of what we're doing, and no teasers or come-ons or anything like that. You know, it's like, you know, when the book comes out, it's, you know, it's going to cost, you know, like $4, $5, $6. I don't know what, you know, not a lot of money. Pick it up and you know, read the first issue. And I hope you like it. You will.
We're going to keep it black and white, too.
We're going to keep it black and white.
So, just stick with it. And we're going to, you know, and it takes over a long period of time, too. So, it's going to happen.
Two questions related to the
Frankenstein.
I'm wondering, you kind of the same tone of writing, say, like Mary Shelley
had? Not going to tell you. Not going to tell you that either. No, you know.
Well, no. No, I'm going to make it a little easier.
Another question also is, this might even give you some ideas on maybe doing kind of like Frankenstein. So, I don't know if you're aware of another book that I read, it's called by Fred Saberman, called Frankenstein.
Oh, I know that. Yeah. Is that the
It's really interesting because it takes the original novel, and the original novel is set in where space is not Frankenstein himself, not his book.
Yeah.
And what Frankenstein papers did is it took the reverse of this, the entire, basically it's like you rewrite the entire novel.
Well, and there's also a whole thing, you know, a guy who does all the drama. I can't remember his name, but there's a story about, you know, Mary Shelley going down the Rhine with her husband and hearing about a doctor that was electrocuting body parts. Basically, he was just doing what we all meant the frog thing, you know, electrocuting the moves, and everybody thought he was trying to bring them back to life. So there is a little, there's a, even a real world prequel to what happened. She based that on hearing that horrible story about this doctor just electrocuting body parts. Yeah. Any more questions?
You know, like to take a little longer, you know, just so it looks good.
Well, that's
one
thing. With Bernie and I, what we don't like to do is, you know, have to be late for deadlines or have deadlines hanging over us. So what we generally just do is just start working. Just start working and try to get as far ahead as we can, you know, so that we don't have to worry about that weird deadline pressure.
Well, the last couple of things we did, the Ghoul and Doc Macabre, we, at times, we were working on it like one or two pages at a time, and you know, I had no idea where Steve was going next with the script, and I don't know if you did either, you know, because you were so busy with, you know, all these other things, and you know, I think, you know, I would call Steve up and say, you know, I'm almost done with these two pages, I'm going to need another two, and it's, oh yeah, okay, I'll get them to you, you know, like tonight, and you know, I get the pages, and you know, it's, I think you just, you know, sat down and wrote. You know, like you know, yeah, based on, you know, where it was coming from.
I don't write outlines anyway.
It was really exciting. I really enjoyed work.
Well, a lot of it is one thing. Bernie and I, and we play Scrabble every Friday. We try to play Scrabble Friday instead of poker. We just hang out and play Scrabble and talk. And literally, all three, Denshi said was kind of written in a bar.
Right.
But definitely the Ghoul. And Doc McCobb was all us just making jokes.
Yeah.
All night.
Yeah.
Just things we want to do. It was like, how did the robot just look like a lamp? So yeah. Everybody keeps mistaking it for a lamp.
Yeah.
And
stuff, yeah.
You know, and then it worked out, and, you know, and everybody seems to really enjoy it. But yeah, those were really fun books.
Yeah. You know? Doc McCobb was a lot of fun, especially because, you know, you were so willing to just be funny. And you
just
are
silly.
Yeah, well, you know, you are hysterically funny, like in real life.
Nope.
You know?
Yeah.
And you know, it was like, you know, let's put some of that into the comic, you know? And I had a blast. I thought it was a lot of fun.
It really was.
Yeah.
It was really fun. It is. We got to do a lot of stupid stuff. I don't think there ever would have been an occasion where we could have had a character wearing a turban.
Yeah, I know.
It was just, oh, jeez.
Yeah, yeah. Politically incorrect.
Totally.
But, you know,
incorrect.
What the hell?
But he was the real estate swami, so.
Yeah. That was the thing. He's not a real swami.
Yeah.
You know,
no,
he's just
a joke. He's a
yeah, he's just, you know, this oily con man wearing a turban. You know,
making
like, okay, everybody can relax, you know.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I think we had a question.
Strange way of the well, think about it. We had to make the continuity match up.
Right.
And 30 days was what? 2000?
Right.
So we only had Mulder for two more years? So we had to. So if you read it, it ends at the beginning. So, but yeah, I've actually done some of the. There's some things in some of the oversized extras, background, some of the other stories, and then there's. Did the 30 Days a Night novels that I wrote for pocketbooks where we really went into a lot of detail.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, it hasn't been announced yet, but you know, I can get in trouble. But they're going to announce next month, and we'll be doing a big thing in San Diego. I'm going to start doing 30 Days a Night monthly again, just because the response to the X-Files outside of this room. Really good. So we decided that yeah, we need a comic out there. Somebody needs to be doing nasty vampires because I am so sick of these sparkling meeting in bars. It's really better. Oh, they'll be coming back. They're a breed of their own in 30 Days universe. So, and that's the way we're doing it now is all new characters who have no clue what happened 10 years ago. So, have all that stuff to work with. So, I've already written the first few scripts. And we're kind of going after the other vampires. So, we'll see. Look, they're not vampires. That's all there is to it. If you're out in the daylight and you're not drinking blood, you're not vampires. Yeah. And another thing is, you know, honestly, I should really say about the whole Twilight thing is I've never read one word. Well, I picked it up in the store and went, look, it hadn't been edited yet, apparently. So I read that, and then I've never seen the movie. I haven't even seen the one David Slade directed. And he sort of let me off the hook on that one. So I don't really know, because my thing was, it's not for me, it's for kids. It's not for me.
They're all too pretty.
But
vampires are monsters. You know, they are living dead things that, you know,
why would
drink
they want
your
to
blood?
Make out with a human?
You know, yeah.
It's
you know,
like us making out with cows.
Yeah. Why?
You know?
Or a mosquito.
Yeah, they're food, not their dating. Yeah. So, yeah, there won't be much of that. Nobody's taping this, aren't they? Any more questions? Oh, please.
What projects have brought you the most self-pleasure? Not talking about Twilight.
Okay, I was saying, wow.
That's rewarding that you could just do that over and over again. That would
be I mean, working with Bernie. It's so easy. We just both we never had a disagreement about a plot once. Even as crazy as it'll get sometimes. We started out actually because Dead She Said, it started out as I wanted to write a story about a detective who wakes up and he's dead. And so he has to figure out who murdered him and why he's still conscious.
Right. And he's got to do all this before he rots to the point that, you know, he can't move anymore.
Yeah, that's all. He's rotting the whole time. Yeah. So, like, as he's trying to solve his own murder, his skin's falling off. And then Bernie comes to me after we already plotted this first issue. He goes, and I want giant ants. Because he just wanted, he's like, I want to draw pit bull size ants. So I'm just like, I'll figure out a way.
We've squeezed it into the box. You know, so, I said, you know, we've already got this kind of 40s film noir thing going. So let's throw in like a 1950s science fiction thing, you know, with giant insects. And it worked somehow.
It all connected. Yeah. And really, that's the most fun. When you can just sit around with somebody and talk like that and actually turn it into a comic.
Yeah.
And then people actually like it, you know, because that sound, by the way, thrown out of a room. And wait, giant ants. You know, it just makes no sense. But so I did that, and you know, for me, you know, I did a book years ago called Freaks of the Heartland with Greg Ruth. It was just a little 6-issue series, and that was the only time I've ever written. I wrote really, really heavy narration on top of it, and then once I saw the artwork, Greg's work, he had paid so much attention to what was going on, I stripped out all of the captions and just kept the word balloons because he did such, like, I actually put expressions on people's faces, told the story, so that one was really big. Freaks of the Heartland. Actually, David Gordon Green, who made Pineapple Express, is going to make that into a film. Didn't he do a medieval stoner movie? Really? Yeah, okay. Well, what's really weird is when he started out, he used to do these movies called George Washington and all these like really depressing movies. And then all of a sudden he's doing stoner movies. But it's the stoner movies that got him the money so that he can make Freaks of the Heartland. So there you go.
Stoner zombie movie would be welcome.
Yeah. See, that would be so the medieval thing didn't work? Yeah. Did they have weed? Yeah? Okay. Wow, where do we go from there?
Wanted to ask you, I've just started reading your stuff and really enjoying it, so I guess I don't know if you've already done it, but have you expanded like writing a novel, short stories, using beyond comics like that?
I've done 3 Cal McDonald novels and then sort of half wrote the 30 Days novels. I worked with a co-writer on those. And then I actually, what's really funny is in August, my first novel is due at Simon & Schuster, so it'll be coming out in September, October, called A World of Hurt. So that'll be my first novel, even though I've written 5.
Your work and relationship sounds so different from most of the panels I've heard over the years of coming to different Comic-Con, and because usually it's people in, you know, I remember Jim Lee talking about living in Paris, or in France, and just uploading his work to go to LA, and never even knew, you know, didn't meet the writer, certainly didn't sit around playing Scrabble.
Yeah.
So is it as unique as it sounds to me right now? And
I feel like what we do, you know, if we had to compare it, they're doing Hollywood, we're doing independent. We're doing independent movies, so we want to hang out and talk. The creative process is happening.
Almost we're friends, you know. Both of us are lifetime fans of horror movies and comics and all this stuff. We have all this stuff in common, and we also work in the industry, and all of this, you know, just kind of slops over onto everything else, you know. And you know, I mean, we never get together just to have fun where some kind of work doesn't happen.
Well,
where, you know, just, you know, have an idea and just kind of starts bouncing back between us.
Yeah, it's really not. You know, it doesn't feel like work.
Yeah.
And that's a big part of it.
Yeah.
You know, but I have situations where, you know, I do, if I work for DC or something like that, sometimes I don't know who the artist is.
I've done that myself, you know, where, you know,
I've
worked with writers, you know, really, you know, very good writers that, you know, I never met.
Yeah, that's all, I don't know, it's a different process that way. I wind up writing much, much more detailed scripts. I t- tend to strip, like, his scripts are for him are like me talking to him.
Yeah.
You know, it's my, it's very conversational. It's never anything I'd want anybody but him to read. You know, because it's all just, you know, making jokes, just trying to, what movie references maybe this comes from, da da da. But if I do something, and it's just, you know, and this happened, DC hired me to write a 10-page Spectre for an upcoming JSA annual, I think. And I don't know who the artist is going to be, so I just had to write very straight, very detailed, get everything out there, and, you know, no conversational bits at all, just all business.
How do you, for your, how's your writing process?
My office looks like a serial killer took it over. It's just like post-its everywhere with like some weird scrawl, like, kill Mary! And I'm like, all over. And yeah, like I said, I don't outline. IDW tried to get me to publish the outline for the second 30 days because it was three lines for six issues. You know, I was just like, that's, but I, you know, I had a beginning, I had an ending. So I knew where I had to start and where I had to end up. And that's the fun. The fun is exploring.
Yeah, you're
exploring. Yeah, that's the, you know, I know people who write outlines that I'm literally like, turn it in, it's the script. Like, you wrote it, you know, but they just, it's a different process. The fun of it for me is really diving in. It drives my editors nuts. But, you know, there's nothing I can do about that.
Considering going back and exploring Frankenstein,
Captain Stone is a kind of ongoing project. I'm working with some CGI artists on that, and we're trying to put together something with Captain Stern that's, you know, a pitch for either a movie or a TV show or something. You know, what we want to do, we're at the point now where we don't know exactly what it's going to be. We talked for a long time about, you know, well, let's do it as a, you know, kind of a cartoon show, but, you know, computer animation. And, you know, just create this whole world. And then we talked about, well, why don't we cast actors and do, like, you know, live action, but with an awful lot of CGI, you know, environment, you know, like the way George Lucas did, you know, the Star Wars movies, where, you know, there was practically nothing on set except blue screen, you know, and these actors running around, you know. So, yeah, that's a way to go. So, you know, we're going to see what happens.
And we have a Batman Swamp Thing that we want to do really bad.
Yeah.
And we've told DC, so they know it.
Yeah.
So, yeah, we'll see what happens.
Yeah. You know, again, I'm surprised, you know, DC hasn't come, you know, banging the door down about this.
Well,
you know,
right now,
it's like, you know, what? Why wouldn't you?
Because they're moving him from the Vertigo universe, and they're making him less edible, hippie-like, and more like your version now.
Oh, yeah.
So now he's in the normal. They got to bring him into the
DC
universe.
Bring him back into the DC universe,
yeah. DC universe, then maybe we can do something. Because, yeah, I mean, everybody was just riffing on Alan Moore and eating him. Every issue, it's like people are taking bites off of him and having hallucinations. It's true.
Yeah.
You know, that's the comic.
Yeah. So I call them peyote thing.
Yeah. Hi.
No.
Okay.
It's no warning.
Yeah, now.
Okay. Okay. Only 10 minutes to go.
10 minutes, guys.
Yeah.
Okay, everybody say hi to everybody on Facebook, please.
Yay.
Oh, that's so nice. Hey, and it doesn't look too empty. Good. See, I wanted you guys to wave. You guys filled in the seats when you waved. Good. Thanks.
Recommendation for getting that to somebody that we guys start nowadays?
You know what? I think these days more and more I'm preaching do it yourself. I don't know if you came by my table, I'm self-publishing my own prose right now. Because it's such, I mean, I'm doing the novel for Simon & Schuster, and that's a whole separate deal. But here, just for example, if I had a second novel, I'd have to wait another year. Just because that's their rule. You know, if you're in the mainstream publishers, they only want to do one a year. There are so many independent presses out there, though. I know there's a lot of places you can check. As a matter of fact, last month, I was in Austin for the World Horror Convention. And if you go to the World Horror Convention website, there's a list of independent publishers. There is, you know what, just drop me a Facebook message. There's a guy named RJ7, he's doing nothing but zombie novels right now. And they're all being endorsed by George Romero. So that might be a place to go. There's always a place, but what they're doing there, you can do. You know, that's what I figured out, you know, we could print books in Hong Kong for $1 a copy. Like, what the hell? You know, I mean, I'm not thrilled. I got to do mail order, all that stuff. But, you know, doing it yourself is a really good way to do it. You know, you can also just do it completely digital, online, so people can read it. You know, put up a couple chapters, see what people think. You know, put up a chapter of it, see how people react to it. Use that as the thing you send out to people. I mean, that was for a few thousand copies, plus we did like boat shipping. If you do overseas, just don't get the air crates, that it'll double your printing automatically.
Yeah.
But if you can wait 3 months, it costs nothing. And honestly, even, I mean, all printing is very, very affordable. There's also Lulu.com. Yeah, I mean, there's actually places that you can just do print on demand. So. I actually thought, you know, I was worried when, you know, I've said it before, I was worried when he was cast. When I saw Black Hawk Down, that was when I wanted to see, you know, something where, you know, because most of his movies didn't give me anything to work with, and he's just the cute guy. So I thought he did a great job. I really did. You know, in the end, I thought he really threw himself into the role, and he got it. And I mean, he really did struggle with it. I think the Lego panel's about to start. Any more questions?
Put down downstairs on the first floor near the back of the building.
The hook?
The hook.
Are we done?
Okay.
Thank you, guys.